about like NSFRUs. So if you haven't heard, basically the NSF gives money to schools across the nation to hire undergrads for the summer to come to their school and do like some kind of research for 8 weeks or so, and they pay you money, and yeah. So I guess each of us have participated in these things, so we'll tell you about our experiences and things that you should know about applying and what to expect.
Wait, let's go down and say name and where we did our RU and vaguely what math we like.
Okay. My name is Danny. I guess I'm a fifth year. I like vaguely geometry and with some like physical flavor. And the RUs I've done, I guess I've done like quite a few. I started off with an RU in applied math in Carnegie Mellon, and I think that's been like kind of a pretty long running option for people who like to do applied math. It's a good program. Like, I guess we'll talk about it later. I did a PCMI workshop for 3 weeks, two summers ago, so not the most recent one. And that was in, like, kind of, I forget, there was some analysis involved. I'm not really an analyst. But I did like Utah. And I, last summer, I was at Berkeley. They have an RTG, Geometry and Topology, RU, run by grad students.
Three undergrads was our group. There were a bunch of other groups, and we got a lot of good interaction. I had a great time.
I'm Surya. I'm a third year. Yes, so two summers ago, I did, I like physics-inspired geometry and topology. Two summers ago, I did an RU at University of Indiana, Bloomington, and that was pretty cool. It was a geometry project. Last summer, I went to both PCMI and I did another RU at Michigan, which was really cool. And yeah.
Do you want to talk about?
Well, does anyone have any questions first?
Like preliminary questions.
Yeah.
Maybe we can explain it too well.
Yeah, so. Like, I mean, I'm a little confused about like what the hell an actual RU is, or why you would do it, maybe, or I don't know, anything like that.
When the deadlines are. They're approaching, so.
When are the deadlines?
Yeah, that's true. I mean, some start in January, but. At any rate, so there, if you haven't applied yet, no fear. I mean, there's usually quite a few that are still open. I know, though, mid-February, so if anyone, there's an RU at Chicago, that's the deadline is a couple of days. But there are a couple that are end of February, like the Carnegie Mellon.
That's the
19th. Sorry.
Chicago's the 19th.
19th? Okay. And then a couple are also like early to mid-March, so you guys still have time.
Where do you apply for RUs? Like, how do you apply for one?
Well, okay, maybe we should frame, like, why you should care. Maybe that's a good place to start. I mean, just to be clear, like, there are basically two reasons to do RUs. One is, and they're not exclusive, but one is you're at, like, for example, at my RU, there are quite a few people that were from, say, Dickinson College, which has very few math professors, very few research opportunities. So going to an RU is really your best chance as an undergrad at getting exposure to math research. For us at UT, not at all the case. I mean, you know, we've got so many floors of professors doing research in math constantly, and, you know, going to seminars, even working with professors is totally feasible as an undergrad at UT. The second reason is a little more practical. I mean, you get unique research experience, but honest to God, when you're applying to grad school, not just in math, but I mean in any sort of, you know, more academic STEM, say PhD degree, having an RU on your resume does look very good. I mean, it tells people that you have some serious exposure to what research is, and you didn't hate it, you know, so that you can write about it. It doesn't, I mean, ideally, maybe you get a paper out of it, but certainly in math, people don't look very good. I mean, if you have a paper, God bless you, but if you don't, they don't really care. They just like to see that you did it. So those are kind of the two main reasons, I feel like. And they're, like I said, they're not mutually exclusive, but some mixture of them is important.
I was going to say, it's also probably for the same reason that it's important for, you know, students in like liberal arts colleges, which are not like very much research powerhouses, to go to RUs. It's also important, I mean, at least my experience in the department here is that it's very hard to start research with a professor. So a few people might be like keen to take you on, so an RU is like, at least at UT, in my experience, like, was pretty much the only way to kind of check out what research is. And also to form connections, I think. So RU projects are designed to be kind of, it's usually like an 8-week program. And so the projects by design are going to be sort of like, supposedly like low-hanging fruit, like at least like from the grad student's work, I mean, whatever that means. Or from like some professor's work that are supposed to be like reasonable to, you know, make progress on in 8 weeks. But sometimes, you know, that actually doesn't pan out. That's okay. It's a great like way to learn how to cope with failure. speaking from experience. But even if that happens, I mean, it's like not like a total disaster, because like you learn a lot en route to your project. And you meet people, you meet like people you will continue to see in your mathematical career if you pursue one. It's just like a lot of fun. I mean, you get like a stipend wherever you go. And it's usually like, it's more than enough to cover your costs. You get housing. So it's just like a nice way to spend the summer, like possibly thinking about that.
Yeah, the connections are really like key, I guess, because so when you apply to grad school, if people are thinking about that, what the most important thing on your application ends up being recommendation letters. And the recommendation letters, I feel like a great recommendation letter will say, hey, this student knows how to do research. And like at an REU, you can like, you get advised by a professor on
sometimes not a professor. So you have to. Yeah. So at Berkeley, it was grad students. Somewhere else, it might be a postdoc. But in those cases, like if you do good research, like those people are usually overseen. Like, I mean, the grant is, like the program is done under the auspices of like some professor who's theoretically organizing it. Don't be discouraged by that, because those professors can write you a letter even though like, they didn't interact with you as the grad student.
There's a list that the MAA organizes. So if you just Google NSF REUs mathematics, a URL from the Mathematical Association for America should come out that has all of them categorized by like the subject area.
So one thing to keep in mind is that sometimes these links are out of date, sometimes these RUs don't exist.
Yeah.
In fact, the RU that I ended up at, Maryland, I found out about because Jennifer Mann posted a link for it on the math page on Facebook.
Okay.
And I was like, oh, okay, they have some cool probability, and I applied, and that ended up being the one that I went to. I want to say asking professors, but not many professors really know much about RUs, to be honest. It's just not on their radar. It's not a specific thing necessarily. I mean, if you have, maybe we can try to compile a list of just what we figured out and what we know.
Yeah.
In terms of maybe by some subject area, it's, but I mean, to be honest, it's not super centralized. That's the most central thing that you'll find. And that does miss some things, and it does have some things that no longer exist. So just be a little careful. Don't just like take it at face value. But it is the best resource I think we'll have.
Also, I think you apply to a lot of RUs through the website, and it has like all the deadlines. And I think the applications sometimes are pretty like similar in terms of
pretty generic essays and such.
Yeah, so it's like a common app.
Wait, one thing, you have to have two rec letters for this. I mean, I had a postdoc grant in one of them, so it doesn't have to be big name professors, but just keep that in mind. I mean, you want to give somebody at least a week, preferably two or more, to write you a letter, which is why, you know, this is definitely last minute for this round because of rec letters more than anything. But just, yeah, rec letters do have to go with it, so keep that in mind.
Oh my God. That's
a good point. Also, sorry, so there's a, I guess like a well-known quote-unquote RU at Cornell that's been happening every summer, but over the past, so last summer and then this summer, this upcoming summer, it's actually unfunded, so you should watch out for that. It's very rare. I mean, most RUs will like put you up and again like allow you to live, but this Cornell one is, it seems to be like pretty much for Cornell students, unless you know someone.
The first RU that I did was at Indiana University Bloomington, and I worked on a geometry project, I guess. And so we mentioned that like a lot of these are targeted at people from underrepresented communities or people from small schools. And yeah, so I was working on a problem, and I was paired with one other person who was, she was a 40-year-old lady, I guess, from a smaller school that was, basically, like, our backgrounds was different. Our backgrounds were different, and, like, learning to work with someone coming from a different background, that was definitely something that I had to do. And, things that I liked, well, I ended up, this is one of the REUs that often produces papers, so I ended up being able to publish something, but oftentimes, I guess, the problems that you're given at these things are somewhat niche, and because of that, professors often don't want to go beyond that, so the problem ended up taking little more than the first half of the first week, and then the rest of the time was spent doing, I wasn't complaining, they were paying me, so I could just do whatever I wanted, but yeah, so that's at Indiana. I think that didn't have, last year they didn't have funding, but they should be running it again this year. Bloomington's a really nice town, so if anyone's interested in geometry, topology, or then the next year, I went to Michigan, and this is actually, in my opinion, like the best REU, because how it works is you apply to, you can work with anyone at like University of Michigan, as long as you have like matching interests and like are able to like convince someone to work with you, I guess, and they give you, it's unique in that you have to find your own place to live, but they compensate you accordingly to be able to make your housing. And that was actually an interesting experience, because I initially got hired by this I got hired by this mathematical psychologist who he did long story short, he didn't actually know math and wanted to help mathematicians convince people that, he wanted to get math students to, you know, write papers with him so he could convince the world that since math is a product of the human mind, psychologists should tell math people what to do. And thankfully at the program they're very accommodating, and I was able to get out of that project like very quickly and work on something that's actually math and not quackery. So
it's very atypical.
Yeah, that's also a very atypical thing. So.
Ever, yeah.
And then also last summer I went to PCMI, which this is honestly one of the best experiences a math student can have. So every summer in the Institute for Advanced Study, they for 3 weeks they get together people from like all strata of the math community, undergrads, grad students, postdocs, professors, people who are into math education, and they put them in the mountains of Utah for 3 weeks and have everyone take classes and attend lectures and do activities that were related to some central subject. And the year I went, the topic was geometry of moduli spaces and representation theory. I think this next year the topic is on random matrices.
No, it's data
analysis. Data, yeah, it's big data. The random matrices the year after, yeah. So this happens every summer. It's one of the it's one of the funnest things that you can do, and you learn like a whole lot. It's great. So
So one note. So the PCMI deadline already passed for this coming summer. So you can't apply. They have an undergraduate summer school, a graduate summer school, and then a research level summer school. So the undergraduate one is again. I mean, so the one thing I wanted to say is, you know, like we mentioned, if you like topology or probability or whatever, go to these places. Nobody expects you to know more than like linear algebra and calculus coming in. I mean, really the point of these things is I've taken some basic upper division math classes, you know, how the hell does this relate to what you do in your life as a researcher? So they start from nothing and they explain to you, say like, you know, in dynamics, like, you know, what on earth are we doing? Or in geometry, what on earth are we doing? So it's absolutely geared towards people that only have a minimal, like by minimal I just mean a standard sort of first few courses. So my experience at Maryland, I had a lot of fun actually. So I was at the University of Maryland for about 8 weeks. There were 6 projects in total. My project was the probability project. And so all of the projects had either 1 or 2 faculty advisors, 1 or 2 TAs, and somewhere between, in my group there were 3 undergrads. The largest group was like 4 undergrads and a high schooler. So they were all relatively small, really good ratio. We would meet pretty much 3 times a week, like our whole project would meet 3 times a week and discuss stuff and conjecture things and discuss, you know, they had some very vague topic outlined and it kind of grew as we went through. It was a good experience. I mean, we also had like, we had much larger meetings where like once every other week, everybody would give like a brief update on what they'd done. And the idea was in doing so, you sort of build presentation skills, et cetera. And I mean, for the most part, it was this really nice mix of doing quite a bit of math, but also just a lot of socializing. I mean, U of D is pretty close to DC, like a 20-minute train ride, so we'd go down to DC like probably a good 3 times a month, easy, like on the weekends. And we'd go explore the city. We did organize some events, like, you know, there'd be some intramural sports that we'd play, et cetera. So like I found it to be a very cool mix of socializing with my peers, learning some good math. We actually, speaking of, I think Danny mentioned like the frustrations of doing research. So after about 5 weeks, we thought we'd gotten some results that we couldn't find anybody else had done before. And then one of our advisors, Dima, emails us, and he was like, hey, can you check out this paper? It looks kind of similar to what we did. Turns out everything that we had done was done in the 70s. And then after about 78, nobody gave a damn about time inhomogeneous branching processes in this context. And it just kind of got, you know, like suppressed in the layers of academia, but we dug it back up. But, you know, I mean, I think that I got a lot out of doing the research. You know, who cares if it happened to be completely brand new or not? It was a good experience, for sure.
Cool. my research project didn't really pan out. But the thing is, you know, when you're a grad student and you want to write a proposal for this, and you present something as an open question, you really should make sure that it is an open question. So for us, psych, it wasn't. But yeah, like on the way to that, like we learned a great deal. So like, and we, you know, I guess every RU has its own different approach, but usually like you meet with your supervisor, your grad student, pretty frequently. You work on problems together to get you kind of like up to speed, like thinking about, you know, like using the tools that you'll need like later on. Like there was like a whole range of backgrounds coming in, so these things are really geared to kind of get people excited at math and once they've taken the basic load of courses. Like in general, like the expectation, I guess, is like you're kind of taking like a class or two during the summer, and then like you're supposed to like go out and like explore the area. So like in Berkeley, I think actually our grad students were like, you know, if you have to decide between like going somewhere in San Francisco and like reading a chapter of this, like definitely go take the train. it's usually like a really fun social experience. I also did PCMI, and I learned like recommended for I guess the upcoming summer now. Like Utah's a beautiful place. It's where they hold Sundance, right?
Oh yeah,
Park City or Midway. But in the winter, but there's like beautiful hiking. So it brings together like the Sarah, you mentioned it, I think did too, but it brings together everyone from like all different, you know, walks of the math life, I guess. So you have like math teachers as well, like high school teachers, and those are like really fun people to hang out with, and they like organize like these like problem solving sessions, like, you know, where you solve like cute problems that like we did in high school, I guess, but like that are, you know, still interesting.
Mm-hmm. I mean, you might get there. There are definitely people that got to my RU and about 3 weeks in said, wow, I don't actually want to do math at all. And that's kind of the purpose of it. Like, that's not a terrible thing. Some people just say, you know what, screw math. I'm going to check out and have fun. And nobody really yells at them. I mean, you have to do some minimal amount of work. They are paying you to do math. But it's like, you don't feel like, oh, I'm not sure if I want to do math. I shouldn't do it. In fact, I'm not sure if I want to do math is the perfect reason to apply.
That's a good statement. No, yeah, I mean, so there were some people in my Carnegie Mellon program, two people that, yeah, like, actually one dropped out of the program, and like, one was not, they wouldn't really continue wholeheartedly, and yeah, that's, like, a very valid use of, like, you know, that funding.
Say that the two RUs that I did, as soon as I got there, like my experience was definitely not like in line with my expectations. But thankfully, there are people whose job it is to like make sure you're doing something that you enjoy. So like they're very like flexible experiences. So you don't have to fear, oh my god, am I going to be forced to spend 8 weeks doing something I might absolutely hate. So
we've talked for a while, we don't have any questions.
So what's it like learning the math for your project?
So for our project, it turned out to be like all learning and no project. But what happened in this past summer's program for me was, you know, for the first, so it's an 8-week program usually, sometimes like 6 weeks. So what that consists of is, I guess, for me, we would like meet for like a 2-hour lecture every morning, and then like we have a break, we have lunch, and then we do like a 2-hour kind of problem session. And that happened for like the first like 3 or 4 weeks, and then later on, kind of like at least for us, like we got to kind of split into groups, although there was like one kind of project like group leader, I guess, like the grad students, like, we all have, like, could specialize. And so like from then on, like we would like individually. Yeah, but like you can totally get carried away with learning the stuff you need to, and definitely like take more than 4 hours.
I had a great experience with the learning because, so I came in to this probability, like to the RU, and I was on the probability project, and I had just taken, you know, at that point I had like probably 4 or 5 probability courses, both undergrad and graduate level, so I felt like I knew a lot. And both of my professors were these really old school Russian guys who basically made me realize I didn't know anything, and it was amazing. You know, I mean, I knew a lot of words, I knew a lot of theorems, I had ideas, but these guys obliterated me. I just realized I had no like deep concrete sense of how all the theorems work, and I had a lot of fun because of that. I mean, we were only playing with this very specific kind of random process, and they were giving us all these really weird little tricksy problems and proposing all these strange little conjectures, and I mean, basically I just spent 8 weeks getting nerd sniped because it was a really cool experience, and it was very similar to Danny, where we had probably the first 2 weeks were purely just exposition to make sure, and kind of like Siri mentioned this too, there was an issue of there were 3 of us in the project as undergrads, and 2 of us, my friend Mark and I, had quite a bit of background in math, just kind of broadly, and then the third group member, Monica, had only had like 1 linear algebra course and 1 calculus course. And so there were definitely a few times when we had to kind of bridge the gaps and talk and figure out how to do that, which in and of itself is a great experience too. But we had this nice mix of like 2 or 3 weeks of exposition, and then after that there was this sort of back and forth between work on this problem or learn this new technique or whatever. It's very nice.
So I think I would go as far as to say that, like, especially in math, the actual problem is like completely secondary to actually like learning the background material, because like the problems in these things, like they're intended to be things that you can do in 8 weeks, and as a result they often end up being like really niche things, because like, I mean, come on, like most math things, like it takes years for people to prove things. But the background material is usually stuff that you can apply in like some broader context, and it's something that you can take with you outside of the scope of like the limited scope of whatever problem you're working on. And so for that reason, it's so my first experience, I had a the professor that I was working with didn't really want to talk about the background material other than what was immediately relevant for the problem, which was like basically nothing. So it's I think I've had like most of the fun that I've had at these things has been from learning the background material, but know that there are professors that are like very driven to get results, and sometimes they might not be as excited about advising someone about background material that isn't immediately relevant.
So he asked about what the application process is like. Just to start, just to give like the basic outline, it's there more or less, I mean, just a few components. So there's a generic form with some information on it, 2 recommendation letters, which are very, very important to whether or not you get selected, and then you'll have to submit maybe an essay or 2 of, you know, why on earth do you want to do this, why should they pick you, and maybe on the side you submit a resume or transcript or whatever. So that's like the basic application. And I mean, there are quite a few of them, but in general, yeah, they've gotten significantly more competitive too. So for example, it seems like university, the most prestigious one is SMALL, which is an RU at Williams. Good luck getting in. I mean, you will. I mean, like, people have gotten in before. It's not at all impossible, but it is a little disgustingly competitive given sort of the nature and purpose of these things. So absolutely make sure, there's no application fee, so make sure that if you do choose to apply, apply to a bunch of them. And don't necessarily pick just things that sound amazing to you. I mean, if something sounds awful to you, don't apply to it. But you'll want to send, I think I sent out like 9 apps or so when I did it. So you do, it is a bit of a numbers game, too.
I think the
movement
Are they? Okay. Yeah. I haven't heard that one. So. Yeah, DeWitt does like common inference and graph theory, and Emory does some weird algebraic number theory stuff.
But Veteran is, doesn't like the output is like higher quality? Or?
Oh, yeah, it's super good.
Yeah,
it's super good.
And competitive in terms of like, so at Emory, this is run by Professor William Ono, or Ken Ono at Emory University, and but most of the people that end up going to this are like people who are medalists in like international competitions, like in high school, and they're now putting stuff with them. Like at PCMI, I met someone who had gone to Emory, and he's an undergrad, but he spent like the last 5 years mastering all the papers in a specific area, and he's like a pro. So there are competitive REUs.
But I think that for the generic ones, though,
yeah.
I mean, they're not, like, you can't apply somewhere and count on getting in, but if you apply to 6 somewheres that are reasonable and apply to 3 that aren't as reasonable, the odds are totally in your favor that you'll get, like, a couple of, at least a couple of applicants, if not more, for sure.
And they certainly, I mean, as we've touched on this before, like, try to, like, right, so part of the, I mean, so these are, like, kind of, like, government, you know, like, sanctioned activities with government funding, and so part of the purpose is to like really like, you know, take a good like, I guess transversal through the whole like undergraduate body. Like they pick everyone from every like kind of like level of background. So so don't be discouraged like if you like haven't taken like, you know, all the upper division classes. Like definitely apply because they're looking for excited people at any level. They try to like have an even mixture of everyone. At least, the generic ones.
I should say that the applications are completely free, so just send them out. Like, yeah.
I mean, and I guess the last thing to say is, in terms of, I mean, obviously we haven't done admissions for these things, so we have no idea. But talking to, at least at my RU, when I talked to people, it sounded like rec letters were essential. Because, I mean, these are professors assessing whether or not they think you can do some research. Grades were a pretty big factor. And then essays were, I mean, a good essay will help you, but a bad essay is not going to kill you. It's sort of the verdict that I got. So not too unlike grad school admission, I guess.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
I mean, I never participated, but
it does make sense, yeah.
Pressing is still a recommendation letter,
mm-hmm.
and then grades. Ask older colleagues if they don't mind sharing that.
Yeah, that's actually quite
that's
true.
We do that for grad school program life at all times.
Yeah.
We adapt to, we just remember to adapt to our situation. It seems that, I mean, it's just an impression that even if you don't, I mean, the rec, will, the professor writing the rec will basically write, he already probably done this before. He's going to erase your name, erase the name of the former student, and put your name. Most of the cases, okay? So don't worry too much, you know, make the connections, you know, work with the professors, but whatever professor you have a connection, ask. And the worst case, he will say, no, I have nothing to inform you, you know, to say about you, and that's fine.
Yeah, that's actually good advice, too, is just, yeah. I mean, to be aware if you do want to do this RU thing. I mean, a generic letter is not a bad thing, but if you happen to go in and give that professor three personal things to say about you, fantastic, right? They can throw in two or three little sentences that make it clear that they know you a little better, and so be it.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, definitely, it's, I mean, this is just in general if you're thinking about grad school, too. Like, you want to be aware that you will meet people who can write you reasonably meaningful letters, so, you know, make sure to go. I mean, you get more anyway.
For grad school, certainly, I mean, you want personalized.
So what we're saying is just go to office hours and talk to your professors. They're fun anyway. I mean, it's a good idea. You get more out of classes, too.
And what a professor cherish is if you show real interest.
Yeah,
and I'm not a professor yet, but they can tell if your interest is genuine or if you're just pushing for it. So
yeah, that's very good.
Be honest. Go to office hours because you're curious, and they love it.
Mm-hmm.
They should. But they can tell if you're just that pushing.
They would agree to it and, you know, not really tell you. You can, it's definitely, I think, fine to ask, like, can you write me a good letter?
Okay.
The question I would pose is, are you comfortable writing me a letter?
Mm.
I think
that's a good way.
That's a little bit more than,
yeah,
write me a good letter. Are you comfortable writing me a letter?
Yeah.
Right. That sounds like you would like to ask. And then if you sit there and look warm, mm-hmm, you might say thank you, look for other professors,
mm-hmm,
you know. That's fine. I mean, you are just asking at this point.
Mm-hmm. To be safe, I would definitely use the word good, though, because, like, not to scare anyone, I have heard of, like, occasions of those students asking for letters and things about them in the letter, and I'm not entering into certain programs, so I would use.
Serena casts a very wide net for this kind of gossip, though, so he's got a pretty broad sample for that.
I think for the student not to notice that the professor is going to write something bad, it's because it doesn't establish that minimal connection.
Yeah, I think that's more likely to be.
And then you won't know, and a bad letter will kill you. You won't know. So establish a good connection, honest connection.
People write actively bad things about you in letters.
specific people.
That's happened to
you. But it's like, so, like, I mean, I'm aware that, like, if a professor, like, you know, like, doesn't feel like they could write you a letter, but they still agreed, like,
mm-hmm,
it'll show them because they'll write, like, generic things.
I think
this person, like, picked up this item very quickly or something like that. Or, like, not even mention an item, just like a topic. Or, like,
it came to class.
And people can read through that. I mean, they're very different.
Yeah, that's
so,
several ways to disqualify somebody.
But never actively. Okay.
So follow your instinct. I mean,
think of the name, that's all you can do.
I mean, I personally, I would say to a student, no, I'm not too comfortable. But I know the faculty that would say, sure.
Yeah.
But trust in your gut feelings. You know, if you just show up on the last half hour and then talk to this professor, and then you might say, yeah, but then, yeah. So if you build a relation with one, then you're much safer. That's good.
On the flip side, remembering this, when you do get good, you know, if you get good news after a professor writes your letter, tell them. Like, that's an important, I mean, you know, they're very happy to hear that it worked and they're excited for you to go do whatever. If they wrote you a letter, they like you. Like, be sure, it's worth a lot to just go and mention it. It's important. And easy to forget sometimes. else, or? It's not like a very deep topic to say.
You know, you mentioned something about how it's kind of hard to like get like research with like the professors here. Like, can you like, is it like, what is it about it that's like so hard? They're just like hard asses, and just like they don't really have anything to do
with
it.
They just do really hard math often, though, so it's kind
of
like.
Yeah, so like, I think a lot of the topics they're interested in, like, it would be like, I guess, since it is a research university, like, they are pressed for time. So I think they're usually
on
the line. But yeah, sorry.
You don't have bad things to say, but just so cool.
Oh.
I don't know, so we can actually answer the question.
Okay.
I don't think anybody has bad stuff to say. I mean, it's on video anyway. Nobody knows.
I mean, that's my, like, impression. I mean, I, like, professors are, from my experience, very willing to, like, read with you
mm-hmm.
if you're excited about a topic
mm-hmm.
And have a good amount of background in what you want to read. And certainly, actually, people have done research and, like, did research with people here, so it's not impossible. And it depends on, like, the area as well. Like, some areas might be more amenable to, like, projects that,
and normally, the professors here don't work with undergrads.
Right.
Actually, don't think that's so. Professors here are actually very willing to read with undergrads, in my experience. Extreme, like often professors that are not taking students as grad students will still read with undergrads.
But is that
that doesn't necessarily mean that it will translate into research, right? But at the end of the day, you're an undergrad. Are you really going to walk in cold and get research in the first place? Probably not. I mean, so I would. Again, I think it goes with like, you know, what Antonio said about just like having some common sense. If this person isn't very hospitable to you, it's probably not a good idea to just walk in cold and ask them. But if you've had some decent interactions, like to talk to a professor you haven't had a class with about doing a reading or something is a little out there for sure. But if you happen to have had a class with them, then, I mean, so like I can say, and I guess just to also answer the original question. So I've attempted to do research with two professors here at UT. And both of them, you know, I got along reasonably well with professors. They were very open to working with me and kind of giving me a project. And in both cases, it was kind of, I mean, fundamentally, there's an issue on the one hand of but maybe three things, right? So one, there was just background. There were some issues with me not knowing certain fundamental things. But then the real issue was my maturity as sort of like a math student, where I got so sniped by the general background that I didn't have the maturity to say, okay, I only need to really learn these things and focus on the problem. I kind of got too into trying to learn everything. And that's a big trap to fall into when you're trying to do some research.
That's why we are working on GRP on that.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Yeah, yeah.
We are working on
that. And it takes a lot of time to learn on, you know, it takes a lot of time to really develop that skill of knowing what to learn and what to put aside. And then the third thing was simply just posing the problem. Sometimes, you know, the problem was presented in a very offhand way, and we kind of talk about it, and then it either turned out not to be tractable or to just not go anywhere or whatever. So it's worth asking. It's always worth just bringing it up, even if it's just a reading course or if it happens to be turned into more. I mean, either way, that'll give you a good reply.
Anyway, as a grad student, you start as a reader. You start reading.
So it's...
chill out on the research side and here, not on the part of you, because it's set up, it's strong
to do research,
to do that. But here, you know, reading is the first step. And I know one of the questions he was given, it's quite hard. But the professor hasn't, you know, started off. And one thing that you can do, and if you want to get more involved with the research, and at the same time you're reading, if you have coding skills, even professors who do pure theoretical are willing to do to see some simulations of what they do. So developing coding skills. Interacting with faculty, because you can run simulations. Even if you don't understand the whole problem they're looking for, you can run simulations for them, and then you'll be like, your curiosity will be driving you to get closer to those problems, analytical problems.
Just to emphasize, I mean, even though things didn't work out, and I'm still still, like, you know, get along with these professors. I definitely don't regret any of the sort of, you know, attempts at reading or this or that. I mean, they were all good experiences. It doesn't matter that they didn't go anywhere.
I think they won't be mad because they understand.
Yeah,
they
precisely.
They won't be mad if as always, it's good to be honest with professor. If we start reading it, it's too much for you. Said, professor, I realize it's too much for me, you know, let's stop. They actually appreciate that because it's a sign of maturity of their side. And they understand that you're learning how to manage your time. So a good professor will understand that. If you disappear, not that great. They still gonna understand, but it's better to be honest. Professor, I think I overload myself a little bit. I have those courses that, you know, I need fast applications, so postpone. They will understand as a sign of maturity.
Yeah, cool.
So the pizza should have already arrived.
Also, I mean, if you want, we can just consider stuff up front after.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Then it just goes up general thing.